You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads and broken springs, broken idols and broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Bob Dylan's lyric in Everything is Broken from the album Oh Mercy reminds some of what the market resembles right now. Broken credit, broken retirement, broken stocks, broken data, certainly broken unemployment in the US as we look back on the first quarter. The dominant theme has undoubtedly been the rise of inflation as the number one concern for money managers, surpassing concerns about the pandemic for the first time in over a year, according to the Bank of America Merrill Lynch research study. Let's welcome our panelists to look in the rearview mirror and to find out how that guides asset allocation into the future. Peter Armitage, CEO of Anchor Capital, Greg Cutsen-Allenbergen, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sunlum Private Wealth, and Mia Kruger, Director of Research and Fund Management at Kruger International Asset and Wealth Management. Peter, let's start with views firstly on the macro and the policy environment. And we saw this optimism around the vaccine rollout and expectations of a faster global economic rebound really pick up pace and gather momentum in the first quarter, with the majority of managers that were surveyed by Bank of America seeing a sort of Goldilocks macro view shifting to a V-shaped boom, with expectations for GDP and earnings per share certainly soaring. What is your base case,
Michael? So yeah, I mean, the earnings numbers for the last quarter have just been completed in the S&P 500. We've now got 500 out of 500. And the key takeaway is that earnings in absolute terms were up about 5%. But the expectation, if you go back a quarter ago, was minus 12. So earnings came through 17% higher than what was expected. So that's all well and good. And you would say, well, that must be great for the economy. It's coming back faster than we expect, and must be great for companies. But I think quite a lot of that had started to get priced in. And, you know, the value stocks had kicked up on the basis that the world would return to normal. But then it's moved into a case of perhaps being too much too quickly, and the stimulus from the US coming through, and suddenly people are saying, hold on, you know, this is going to mean inflation goes up, and as a result, the markets kind of forced bond yields up. And the key thing, as you say, for the last quarter is US bond yields going up from 0.7 to 1.7, and suddenly money isn't for free anymore. Suddenly your risk-free asset can earn a little bit of a return. So we saw a lot of, the real edgy kind of tech stocks, which went up another 20-30% this year, come back to where they were at the beginning of the year. So some concerns about too much stimulus and too much growth coming through, and that's really what we've got to balance out. One of the key things we're watching is a lot of the tech shares have come off quite nicely. I think there's still potential for them to come off a little more. But their futures have certainly accelerated, so the business prospects are looking better than ever. And look, so, you know, that's the story going backwards. Going forwards, you think you might get another bite at the cherry in terms of being able to buy into great companies that are growing at 15, 20, 25% at more reasonable valuations than a few months ago.
And I think that is certainly emphasized by the listing of the IPO of Deliveroo, which came in at the bottom end of expectations and is down some way off those as well. The sentiment around tech as interest rates are priced into being increased into the future, that growth versus value conversation now becomes an important one in markets. So, Greg, from your vantage point, what is your macro base case, first globally and then for South Africa?
Well, I think globally, I still expect the cyclical versus defensive theme to continue to play out. But look, a big part of that move has already happened on the cyclical, especially if you take things like the mining companies. You know, they've moved up very, very sharply. Energy stocks, one stage ExxonMobil was about $30-odd, you know, it almost doubled from there. Some of the value stocks still remain quite cheap. So, favor the global banks versus maybe tech over that, I think. A bit of concerning is the US dollar. Seems to, you know, it's back over 90, it's at 93 to the, on the dollar index. That's a concern. If the dollar continues to strengthen, that will be negative for commodity prices and then some of the cyclical companies like the miners, but we'll have to watch that dollar quite carefully.
Now, that DSY index has been surprising. Yeah, that DSY index has certainly been surprising for many who, I remember at the beginning of this quarter, were predicting the end of this dollar bull market and the, you know, the beginning of more of a bearish trend for the dollar. It hasn't played out. What's your base case here in South Africa?
Look, well, in South Africa, I think it's a rising yields in the US, the 10-year Treasury. If it's, and it's quite possible it can go to 2%, puts all emerging markets under pressure. So whereas I was a few months ago quite positive on the rand because of commodity prices improving and as vaccines get rolled out, although we are a lot slower than other parts of the world, but I was quite confident. But I think that you've seen with Brazil and what the drama in Turkey having to raise interest rates, so I think that the Saab could be under pressure to protect the currency if the yield goes quite high and you might see an interest rate hike.
Mia, we did see the quarterly projection model at a local level at the recent Saab meeting pointing to two potential 25 basis point increases, although the Saab governor was at pains to mention that they're not wedded to this particular model and they'll still be data driven by data on the ground and the economy still feels very weak. What is your base globally and locally?
Yes, Michael, they were quite vocal on the fact that they are also very focused on stimulating the economy locally, and that makes me think that it would be highly unlikely that they would raise rates going forward for the rest of this year. I think if we consider the fact that the normalization of rates globally has started to take place, we've looked at the sort of the average of 2% in the US. Despite the fact that it's even just a normalization, it has put pressure on a lot of parts of the market. And as we've seen, it's also influenced the dollar. So we'll have to see how that plays out. The dollar has now strengthened quite a bit. The rand has held up quite nicely against the dollar, considering the rest of the emerging market currencies that have been on the back foot since the strengthening started. But I think on the asset allocation side, we still view emerging market debt as attractive, especially on the South African side. We've seen some inflows of global investors into our local market on the equity as well as on the bond side over the past week. And the inflows, or the outflows rather, the net outflows years to date is around half what we've seen last year up until this stage. So it's looking slightly better for the South African side. But still, on the global side, we, as Peter also mentioned, we think that there could be a possibility that the market could come back slightly further. We think that the growth opportunities for these companies that have been in favor on the growth side won't go out of favor anytime soon, as these growth opportunities for these companies are still being driven. We think it's just been prolonged and brought to the market quicker than initially anticipated. But the shift between the factors from the growth to the value has definitely happened since the presidential election in the US last November, and we've seen a clear shift there. The other factor, momentum, playing into the markets, has now started tilting towards the value side more than to the growth side. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. If that the case remains as it is at this moment, that could actually drive value further.
And it was interesting to hear comments out of the Sun City Bank of America conference this year that they've seen record interest from foreign investors into value names in South Africa, which still in the emerging market bucket offer very attractive valuations. But there's all kinds of risks attached to that. Eskom, the political risk, as we know. I don't want to get ahead of myself on that point. Peter, I think inflation remains the number one issue, as we said, in markets. What 10-year Treasury yield causes a 10% equity correction? Is the market comfortable with 2%? Would it become increasingly uncomfortable beyond that, 3% maybe?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to look at is what does it all mean? You know, ultimately, if you're an investor, you want to invest in something that's going to give you a real return. So, you know, that's in other words, you want to earn more than inflation. Otherwise, your money's going backwards in real terms. So what's reasonable for a US 10-year yield? if you think inflation is going to level off at about 2%, you know, then that bond yield needs to be at least the 2% level on a sustainable basis. Otherwise, you know, why would it attract money? I mean, that's what's happened in the market over the course of the last few years. It's just been driven down and down and down. And while inflation has stayed at kind of the 1% level, so you've been getting a negative real return. So the two things to look at is one, the absolute number, which we've talked about, and then two, what the expectations are. And I think the market expectations are for bond yields still to go up a little bit more. So I don't think the bond yield going from 1.7 to 2 would be calamitous. I think it would be negative for markets. You know, we started off this year with quite a muted forecast global equity return of about 5%. We expected 12% from the SA market because the valuation starting point at the beginning of the year we felt was quite heated in global markets. So I think if US bond yields move towards 2%, equity markets will be under some further pressure. And if it went well beyond that, you know, you've got to remember, you know, global markets, you're sitting at about a forward 21, 22 P multiple.
Yeah.
They're 30% more expensive than historically. Although one has to balance that with, you know, technology is now about 40% of global market capitalization, depending on how you measure it. And those companies, you know, big companies, the biggest companies in the world are actually growing the fastest. I mean, it's a very strange phenomenon. And that's because of the nature of technology and the ability of companies to grow beyond their borders without too much capex. If you've got a good idea, you can create a big business pretty quickly. So a valuation above the historic norms is probably justified. But, you know, 30-35% higher than the average, I think there's certainly still room for a further correction in equity markets. And people talk about this value versus growth. What was considered the value segment of the market, a lot of the value's already been made up. You know, a company like JP Morgan is now trading, and a lot of companies that were considered these value shares are now trading at levels quite significantly ahead of the start of 2019 when, you know, when COVID was still something that happened with the bat and Chinese people in Wuhan. So a lot of that's been made up already. So doesn't mean the trend can't continue for a while. So you've got tech still very expensive and value shares getting back, not really value anymore. We're actually finding it quite difficult to put together a portfolio of recovery shares where the prices haven't already, kind of incorporated a fair amount of recovery.
And that is the conundrum for asset allocation at the moment. Very interesting that. And it also speaks to the conundrum for, and why I mentioned the broken retirement system in the introduction and Bob Dylan's lyrics, because retirees and baby boomers prior to central banks artificially keeping interest rates as low as they have for the last decade would have relied on interest rates in pension funds. Now you've got bond yields have been kept artificially low. And pension funds haven't been able to really rely too heavily on that. They've gone negative in some cases. And so you've seen baby boomers go through their pension funds into equity markets, and it's caused these lofty valuations. So I guess if we do start to see some normalization, Peter, maybe a last point on this, it is a good thing. It's starting to see a return to some level or degree of normalization in the way markets work. If you look at what markets are effectively trying to do here through the lens of a retirement fund trustee or someone who's saving for their retirement.
Yeah, I think the it's always very healthy for valuations to come back down to levels where there's a little bit of upside. I think first of all, for a retiree, locally it's fine. You know, you can still get 9.5% on a 10-year bond. From a global perspective, the big issue has been, if you're not in equities, it's been very difficult to get a return anywhere else. So higher bond yields are good for, you know, the average health of, you know, the US consumer and people who are relying on some lower risk type assets. And an overinflated stock market isn't really good for anybody. You know, the retiree with new money coming in, investing in things at too high a price is not a situation that's not what you're looking for from a global perspective. Yeah. So I mean we're kind of preparing ourselves, and our mindset is one that there's potential downside in the market, and you know, to be keeping some cash on the sidelines to take advantage of that as it kicks through.
The other major story, Greg, was commodities, and we spoke a lot about the potential of this new commodity super cycle. How do you read commodities at this stage? Is there still value to be had in commodities from here?
I think there is a lot of value still to be had, although we've had a big part of the move already, and you could expect at the moment that things could slow down because China is looking to delever somewhat. And I think that could be a little bit negative for commodities and as well as the stronger dollar. But I still think the longer term trends, so difficult to call it a super cycle, but I certainly believe we are in a bull market. There is, you know, for the world moving to clean energy and green tech, it's a manna from heaven for some of the base metals, you know, so like copper and things like that. So that's a long-term story. Also, copper is in deficit at the moment together with nickel. So there's a lot of benefit for commodities at the moment. Now, having said that, the dollar and China slowing down can weigh on commodities. I'm not sure if you've seen recently that the stock of homes for sale in the US is at an all-time low. Then nobody is selling, so could trigger a construction boom, a major construction boom, and that could be very good because, you know, nothing yep. uses commodities like construction. So that could be something to watch out. But the big part of the move, as Peter has alluded to in some of the cyclical or value stocks, has happened. You've seen Anglos go from in the 200s to 600. So you've seen BHP double. So there's been a major moves on that. So I think we're in a period of consolidation, but I don't believe that the outlook for commodities is we've come to the end of that. I think that after a period of consolidation, commodity stocks should continue to outperform.
And one of the big beneficiaries locally has been PGMs on the back of their use in catalytic converters. We've seen the rhodium price smash all kinds of records, Mir. But if you look at it on a valuations level, you have to believe that these prices are going to remain at these levels for the next decade for these valuations to be justified, if you're going to be getting into one of the PGM counters. That goes against history. We've never seen a period like that in history. Where do you see the PGMs going from here?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And the fact is that these, as both Greg and Peter have now alluded to, many of these companies have actually already run quite hard to follow what we've seen on the commodity price drive and the demand coming from China. And now with possible further stimulus, you know, coming through from the US, they're talking about $3 trillion on the cards for the infrastructure development that Biden is planning over there. And then, as Greg also alluded to, the shortage on houses. But the fact remains, when we look at PGMs, there has been a shortage in many of these metals over the last couple of years. There's been a shortage in terms of development into these mines, and we've heard from all the local producers that they will be putting enormous amounts of money into developing projects further and extending some of the projects that they've already been developing. So there will be quite a lot of PGMs coming online probably over the next 5 years. But we'll have to see a strong demand for these commodities at the current prices and higher. And if the dollar keeps on strengthening, it will be tough for that. But that just shows you how difficult it is to extrapolate or to predict the movements that you can see in any commodity prices. And that's why it's such a cyclical environment for these commodity companies as well.
Yeah, it has been a graveyard of many forecaster, CEO, advisor making predictions out into the future, gearing up and then seeing it all collapse in a heap. Although that cycle post the global, or just before the global financial crisis, seems to have ushered in a great deal of capital allocation discipline amongst many of the mining CEOs who haven't gone out and geared up the balance sheets again. So one hopes that stays like that. On that particular point, Peter, what would you like to see companies do with some of the cash that they're generating at the moment? Because we've seen a lot of share buybacks in the past and paying down debt. Not too much investment in CapEx. What would you like to see companies doing with excess cash?
I think it's very much company and sector dependent. So you know, the markets, the flavor in the market and what's been rewarded over the course of the last few years is guys paying cash out and giving money back to shareholders either via a dividend or via share buybacks. Share buybacks in the US are often just to cover for the massive shares that get issued to executives who are earning ridiculous amounts of money if, you know, if their total packages are put together. You know, I intrinsically have got a fundamentally different view. If a company is able to earn a great return on capital and can sustainably do that and has the opportunity to reinvest that capital, I'm very happy for the company to keep that money and invest it and grow the business. You know, if they give me the money back, if they're earning a 20% return on capital, they give me the money back, you know, it's a challenge for me to try and earn a 20% return.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's across different sectors, I think if they have the opportunity to reinvest at high levels, then, you know, invest. I think some companies, you know, especially where investors are nervous about management's ability to allocate capital efficiently, and the market's become a lot more discerning about that. You know, the market is, all the conversations we have with brokers and other asset managers, et cetera, there's an obsession with the ability of management to allocate capital properly, and it really is a differentiator over time. So, you know, in the platinum companies, I think reinvesting is insane. Platinum is going to absolutely go through the floor at some stage. I don't know when. What you've got is a temporary supply-demand imbalance because people didn't invest in the past. If you look back 3 or 4 years ago, platinum went nowhere for years, and every single platinum company CEO predicted it going through the roof. It took 4 more years to do that, but electric vehicles use virtually no platinum. You know, so that imbalance at a point, and you're now seeing lots of global players say all electric by 2030.
Mm.
You need to have hydrogen, which uses a lot more platinum than current vehicles, coming into dominance for platinum to be sustained. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want the platinum companies I'm invested in to be doing anything other than maintenance capex. Then right on the other side of it, you've got the big tech companies, where I'm very happy for them to be investing. You know, these companies, if you take Facebook, $11 billion of net income in their last quarter. So that's $40 billion of annualized cash. And these big 6 or 7 tech companies cumulatively are investing over $100 billion a year in the future. You know, that those are the engines and factories where the future is being reinvented. And every now and then you saw it with Facebook and Oculus recently. They kind of present to the markets a new growth vector, which is driven by money that they've spent for quite some time. So those massive cash flow generators, I'd be very supportive of them continue to invest. So I mean, it's very sector specific.
Absolutely. And just as we go around the table, you've got about 30 seconds each to give me what your allocation split would be between equities, cash, and bonds over the next 12 months. Greg, let's start with you.
Well, I would have, if you're talking globally, I'd have no exposure to bonds and be 100% in equities, although I do believe that, you know, it's dependent on what happens to the interest rates. But and then in South Africa, I would probably still have a 70% split towards equities and maybe 20% to bonds, and I'd keep 10% in cash.
Mia?
Yes, I think I'm with Greg in terms of the global valuation on bonds not looking attractive at all for me. They're fully allocated to equities, but we in our balanced portfolio there, we of course have to have a more conservative stance. But on the local side, from a South African investor perspective, on a balanced mandate, you definitely want full global equity exposure, despite the fact that we could see a correction there. And on the local side, we still have value in bonds. So there we will have some allocation there. We also like to look for new opportunities into renewable energy infrastructure on the local side, due to the fact that we think that's one of the areas in the market that we will probably over the coming years see good returns. And it's not always that easy to be very confident about the economic growth of local listed shares as we are about the renewable energy side.
Peter?
Globally, I'd keep 20% in cash, zero in bonds, 80% in equities. Cash doesn't earn anything, but we think equities will pull back, and we'd be very happy to deploy that cash. From a local perspective, bonds are attractive, 9.5% yields, and we still like the local equity market, so locally it would be 70% equities and 30% in bonds.
Well, there you have it, folks. Three of the best in the business giving you a wrap of the first quarter and what they'll be doing over a very interesting 12 months that lie ahead. Peter Armitage, CEO of Anchor Capital, Greg Kutzen-Allenbergen, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sunland Private Wealth, and Mia Kruger, Director of Research and Fund Management at Kruger International Asset and Wealth Management.